some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
Agitation. The master is always deep in contemplation, while I frantically attempt to record his wisdom, the movement of his finger, and though I am yet to comprehend even the daintiest morsel of his wisdom, I know that this is my life's calling. The Golden Order has bestowed me, talentless as I am, the great duty of documentarian.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a favorite that holds you or makes you feel held.
And this week we are headed up toward the windmills. As Gary alluded there, we're in the midsummer lane. Although the brutality of what's involved is a little bit more on Front Street here.
It's a little bit more on Front Street, even though it is pretty on Front Street. In retrospect, in the midsummer, this is one of those areas, like several areas, where for a time it was my favorite in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy gave me a heads up. Like he gave me two texts in advance of an area, one in advance of Carrion Manor,
mm-hmm.
You know, hand zone, the hand stuff zone. Yeah, and then stuff. Once in advance of this, like I just cleared an area that you're going to love. And then I got to ping him back with the guess. And he got to be right, and it was a real good friendly feeling.
Yeah,
because this is my shit.
Yeah, he knows that you're a folk horror
enthusiast.
Folk horror enthusiast. Yeah,
aficionado magazine.
Yeah,
it's also when I go. This is not only one of my favorites for just tone and kind of vibe reasons, but looking into it, like in preparing for the episode and stuff, like. I think this actually is kind of an important piece mm-hmm. of stuff we've been looking at recently. Yeah. So we'll get into it when we talk about it. But like, I think this is actually a fairly important place to the old school mythology of this game.
Yeah.
The pre times.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be excited to hear because I mean, I definitely know what it's like now.
Having a roni. Yeah. What did we do last time, Cole?
Oh, Gary, last time we explored that wooded valley at the center of Altus, and we saw a whole bunch of real wormy face guys, just real unpleasant sounds and sights. And then we climbed up to the plateau where Lansiax is, killed that majestic beast, and, went tomb raiding in a very Zelda place. And now we are headed toward the north. There have been these windmills kind of calling to us from a distance, and we're going to get right up to them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we head up this road up and out of this forest valley, heading towards those. And we pass a gate on the way where we find our celebrants. This is going to be our primary enemy for this section.
Yeah.
These women in these floral gowns, headdresses, dancing with weapons. One of my favorite item descriptions on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are in the item description good zone.
Yes.
For a bunch of this stuff, where it's just, it's a beautiful garment, festive and ceremonial. There are faint traces of blood. Like, or just, that's it. Like, just one sentence. No further implication. Like, there's a wry kind of sense to these descriptions. And you can see it looking at them like they are, dancing mm-hmm. In this way that kind of feels manic and compulsive.
Yeah. This is the real Black Star kind of vibe to some of it.
Yeah. Black Star is a good point of comparison. Yeah,
talking about the Black Star video for the David Bowie song.
Yeah. The vinyl David Bowie album.
No.
There's a bunch of these. They're all women and they have different roles kind of based on their weapons that mm-hmm. they have and whether they are wearing the blue outfit. The blue outfit has a different description and they have a special place in these festivals.
Yeah.
These unarticulated festivals.
we're gonna see what they're up to. Yeah, they've got those different roles, and we can get some of the weapons here when we kill them. It was not apparent by, you know, looking at something like, is that a rib cage on the end of a long stick? Yeah, that's a rib cage on the end of a long stick. These are made of bone.
Yeah, these people are taking parts and reusing them. Mm-hmm. For this. And I think like a really crucial hint as to what's going on here, other than the boss of this area, which is the biggest hint.
Right.
Which I'll admit, like as a Bluntstone, the first time I played felt like a non sequitur, mm-hmm. before I had any kind of conception of the story. But I think that the hammer you get when you get this has a key line in it where it's got a skull at the end. And the skull is too big to be human.
Yeah.
So we know that they're dissecting people of some type. Yeah. Here, and we know they're not human, and right. We know the boss of this area is a godskin noble. so I'm pretty sure this is the festival here. These are the godskin people, mm-hmm. And that is what they are taking apart here. Like, there are people as well. I think that they also skin regular people. We're going to get to that little side village where that's implied. But like, these are parts of gods. Like, these are minor godlings, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, one of the weird questions about the godskins has always been, all the gods are accounted for. Yeah. Where are they getting these skins? You know? Right. And I think that this does as much as like several other things in the game to imply that there are lots of little minor godlings and half gods and stuff, like any one of these mythologies that have been well harvested before we come along.
Right. I mean, the other thing that would kind of point to that is the wandering mausoleums, right?
Yes.
Okay. But first off, who took all these gods' heads? And yeah. Also, there are other gods here. The definition of god is fluid, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, you get the distant people like Godric, right? But still, like, he is considered notable because of a particular lineage that that goes down. We have no idea of the exact timeline, but generations and generations have, you know, probably passed. And yeah, things can get dilute, but they're still out there and still, you know, them skins still spend.
They totally spend. Well, and the it says a lot that the era that we are in has as few enough gods that we can name them.
Yes.
You know, if those two facts along with each other, like there are few enough gods that we can name them, count them on two hands. Mm-hmm. And there's an entire religious sect about skinning them and making clothing.
Yep.
Is a great little two sentence world building situation. And seeing where quite literally where the sausage is made for that is a really cool key piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Let's go to their headquarters, Dominula. Yes. Man, I should have looked into the etymology here.
It means small maiden or small woman. Like,
gotcha.
Woman.
Okay. Yeah. You know, they're human sized. Yeah. Human sized dancers. I can see that. But we get there, you know, we pass through this gate and we're at one of those Altus crossroads, which is just big branches. But we're going to head northeast, kind of up this path toward this hill. The village is, you know, exists among some of these windmills. There's one big at the top there, but it's entirely built up this long path. Heading up toward this huge outcropping that sticks out over the northeast ocean cliff. The views from the north of Altus are real cool and very confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. So we mentioned this before when they were dancing, they're also laughing.
Yes.
They're kind of giggling here. And that makes sense because most of them are not aggressive. As right. We walk up this nightmare hill city, like I would not like to live on a city where I had to walk up a hill every day because I'm a fat piece of shit. there's an eeriness to this. This is one of the first, if not first, it's a very rare thing to have a non-aggressive enemy, mm-hmm. in this game, and lends this whole thing. Like, this is an explicitly horror themed like area of the game.
It's
for a game that contains a lot of horror. There are a few parts of it that name check. a specific thing. Like compare with Bloodborne, mm-hmm. where you have like the whole game is a horror game, but you have subtypes. Like you go to Hemwick and it is the folk yeah. horror area, and you go to Kanehurst and it is the aristocratic vampire horror mm-hmm. zone. This kind of non-aggression, them standing around waiting for you to act, is perfect for atmosphere. Like it's such a good choice.
Yeah,
for this.
And I love, like, yeah, of course they would be non-aggressive. Like you're not part of their thing, but also they have business. They got dancing to do. They're commencing mm-hmm. to jiggling, Gary.
Yes. The commence to jiggling that they're doing in celebration of this, you know, godskin yeah. apostasy. Yeah.
And something that starts happening as you start going up the hill. I have a note about this later, but it kind of starts a little bit down here, just as we're talking about the fact that they're doing all this skinning and stuff. You start seeing pink flowers, and it is a markedly different color palette up here than you see in the rest of Altus, which is this very burnt and, for lack of a better word, tarnished. Kind of kind of gold, you know. Here it's pink, and it gets pinker as you go up, and it starts overtaking this flowering ivy, overtaking the crucifixes that are here. And those crucifixes are very Hemwick Charnel Lane kind of touch, but also overtaking yeah. the houses. But like this thing, so like in Midsummer, it's sort of the case, but also in specifically the Wicker Man. Right. The the flowery festivals, the maypole. Yeah. Kind of thing. It's all fertility stuff. Right.
Yes.
Like and there are trappings here. They are taking the trappings of fertility for these rites that they are doing, even though it is this kind of, I don't know, perverse inversion.
There's nothing fecund about any of this stuff.
This isn't about sowing. This is about harvesting, and it's not about corn. It's about corns, because you pull off part of their skin on their feet and they got corns there.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a long walk.
Okay. Sorry. I'll take
it. Kind of a long walk up a hill village to get to the corns thing. It is definitely, reaping.
Yeah.
Not sowing. I don't know if it's so one of the things, you know, you never know when an aesthetic marker is being borrowed.
Right.
You know, anything. I don't know if the fertility illusions are part of this.
Right.
Like, I don't know if that's just like they wanted to have a creepy celebratory or festive mm-hmm. air to this and used flowers and, you know, kinds of rites of spring, midsummer ritual imagery for that. It seems very explicitly about skin and dudes.
Yeah, very much
exclusively
so.
skin and gods and dudes. Yeah. Gods here, dudes out west. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But it is neat to kind of analyze that aesthetic marker and see what it plays off against. There is a dissonance there that probably is confusing, but also, I don't know, it works for me. Because I'm very fond of either.
it works for me because it's you know, flowers don't have to symbolize, you know, we do flowers for all kinds of stuff. We do mm-hmm. them for funerals, for God's sakes. Like, it doesn't have to symbolize fertility. One of the things I really like about this area and these enemies is, and this is also, I'm going to say one of the few as opposed to only, because only always gets you in trouble. Mm-hmm. One of the very few enemy sets that are not reused anywhere.
Yeah.
Something about this area that I really love is that it does feel contained as a zone with purpose without, remainders.
Yeah.
The way that a lot of them do. So like we think about last episode, we talked about those worm face guys, and those are fun to speculate about, but we always have this big asterisk remainder of, oh yeah, but they're also on Fera Missoula and there they get blinged out mm-hmm. where we have to kind of wrestle with that here. Not so much.
Yeah.
Like, this is one zone with an ecosystem with one enemy that lives in it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm, you know, being totally honest, like, I could have used a lot more of that in Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Like, I love this game, but I really appreciate that kind of focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels special because it is. It is rare mm-hmm. because it is, right?
Yeah.
These are just here. And, you know, I'll say this. This is an easy zone. Like, there's tricksiness to it. you know, mm-hmm. when you start pissing them off, and especially as you get further up and the red-eyed ones start showing up, mm-hmm. And especially when they start hiding in the bushes and doing ambushes on you, that gets a little tricky. But like, this is kind of like Hemlock Charnel Lane, which also was a bit like of a little breather. Bit of a break. Yeah. I mean, especially after the Cathedral Ward, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
I want that. Like, I want that in these games. I want areas mm-hmm. where the adversity isn't just reflex based. It's also atmosphere and oppression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's trying to create more feelings to me than like, how hard can this be?
Yeah.
You know, even the boss, this is the easiest version of anything you'll fight with Godskin in the name. Like, yeah. this is easier than the one in the Divine Tower. It's definitely easier than Duo. It's easier than the Smo version.
Yeah.
The fat version. The Mr. Fantastic version is pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we alluded to the ones who are wearing blue, serving different purposes. These are young maidens. They've got a special role, role of honor in the ceremony. Yeah.
Which, again, like a really great inversion, because when you read that, if you're familiar with folklore, when you hear role of honor, you immediately think they're being sacrificed. I think they just get to like, you know, eat the neck meat or whatever. Like they just get to like, the special role is they get to like use the knife or whatever. They get to flens. Uh-huh. It's not that they are punished, but when you hear like special role in a folklore ceremony, you think, oh, the Wicker Man, you know, I'm going to be that dorky cop.
Yeah, right. You know? That dorky virgin.
Yeah, that nerd that got burned at the end of Wicker Man because he didn't know how to party. You know?
All you had to do was party a little.
The movie's about bullying nerds. If anyone hasn't seen either of those movies, well recommended from both of us.
Yes.
The Wicker Man is a classic, and we both love Midsommar.
Yeah.
Very worth your time.
We talked about both of them on a show you have access to, Unfilmable. Yeah. Yeah, we have episodes about both of those bad boys. And we are talking about the 1970s Wicker Man, not the 2000s one. Nicolas Cage
one. Of the horniest and hottest movies of the 70s.
a musical.
Yeah, and also a closet musical. Yeah. There's a ghost nearby, one of those little exposition guys here. Mm-hmm. And I think this is important for two things. Like, so when you talk to him, he says, "Eek, I hear a festive melody. No, don't skin me. My hide is filthy, I swear."
Don't eat me. I don't taste very good.
I don't taste very good. He's not a god. Mm-hmm. They do both here. Yep. And we're going to find that out explicitly when we go to the little village to the west.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's the big pile of remains. And the fact that these are all ladies, like, I think that they will skin gods and men.
Mm-hmm.
Here. The purpose of skinning the men, you know, as opposed to only the gods, probably at least in part, is that there were, even though there were more gods before, mm-hmm. there weren't tons of them.
No.
And they are cannibals.
Yeah.
There are people who they skin for this ritual, mm-hmm. For the godskin nobles' clothing and to make their weapons and make their tools. But there are also people they skin straight up to be a human larder.
Yeah. And we also have to think about the industrial purpose of windmills.
You know, yes.
Those aren't just there to, you know, to cool down the tulips as they blow.
No. They power these silos. They grind things, and that could be grinding bone into bone meal. Those grain silos, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, are just full of, you know, bodies and stuff.
Well, now, like, but like, think about it. Think about this. And this is me bringing a lot. And this is also me thinking about the Lands Between as if it was a fucking Anno map, mm-hmm. You know, previously. You'd harvest the grain and then it needs to be milled, needs to be processed. You build the windmills up on this high cliff where the wind is coming in, but still close to the capital. You send it up there, they mill it, and they keep some of it for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can eat. When a war breaks out, and suddenly you're not getting a bunch of grain sent up to you, and that stops, you got to start finding food somewhere. Maybe you turn to the men folks, especially as the gods get rarer and your windmills can also serve to help process them too. you know, whatever you need. So it was like, I don't know if they were built. It seems doubtful to me that they would have specifically been built and allowed to continue existing, killing the gods and such up here. So close to Altus, the actual capital. I think that like some of this is stuff that evolved as shit started getting more dire. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I assume that it was related to the godskins from the start.
Yeah.
Since that predates, you know, all that. And in terms of like why it was allowed to continue, my guess is, I mean, so it's kind of hard to tell proximity, you know, because spaces are abstracted. In video games, like even though we always talk about how big Elden Ring is, it still takes a half hour to run across the whole thing, which is me walking 30 blocks. You know, it's still relatively short, so I don't know where this is supposed to be. I read this as the Sticks, you know, literally rural Altus. I'm not saying for sure, I did not read it as having leave from the powers that be, largely because there is no reference to it. Yes. And if we had seen, you know, we talk about that purity of this being like, siloed, they're not being, you know, one of these creatures in Altus, you know, and which would make sense if it were a dignitary or something like that.
Yeah. There are also so many of them as well, like way more than you would need for one village, you know,
it's probably well defended, you know, it's up a hill. And they also right now, when we get there, there's one godskin noble, this being an important place and a ritual place for them was probably better defended when the godskins had more power.
Yes. I could also see, you know, like maybe they were doing this ritual, but it was more infrequent. Maybe it was, you know, kind of like in the Wicker Man, like, you know, we don't always sacrifice humans. Those were the old ways. But because because our experiment failed, because situations changed, we got to get more brutal. And everybody is kind of, you know, along with that. So maybe this once a year thing became, you know, 365 party, baby.
They kept doing it. Or, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they also could be celebrating in the open now because things have fallen to disarray.
Yeah. Dad's away.
Dad's away. So out. Teacher's out. Let's party. Like we have cereal for dinner because we're at our dad's for the weekend. That could be the case too.
I just, it's fun to think about because it's such a cool, different area.
I love it. It's one of my all time favorites in the game. We keep calling them cannibals. One of the reasons why we do that is because we find raw meat dumplings everywhere. So they are not only making clothing out of skin, which is one of those classic bad things, they're also eating people.
Yeah. And weapons out of bones. They're actually being very efficient with this. Maybe feeding the offal to their draft animals.
Maybe.
But yeah, you get higher up, the pink flowers get more numerous, also like just the more celebrants dancing, you know, they're dancing on the stairs. This is where they start getting the red eyes. When I say this is easy, the ones that do jump out of the bushes are pretty difficult. They've got you know, backstab, grab attack things going on.
And they have numbers. You climb the hill, you know, the light from the Erd tree gets dimmer and dimmer. You start seeing more fireflies and these kind of golden motes lighting everything up. And then in the light, we see a godskin noble or a godskin apostle. Rather. Yes. This is for me, this was the first one of these I ran into in my canonical game.
Yeah.
So big surprise. You know, stretchy boy.
Was he difficult for you at that point, or did you take him out?
I took him out.
Yeah.
I don't think these guys are actually hard on their own. The one that's in the Divine Tower is hard because he's tuned a lot harsher. The moveset of these guys I find pretty predictable. And I also had done, so a little reminder because it's been a while since we talked about it. My canonical first run ran into a wall at Radahn. Who I thought was the hardest thing in the world. And I did everything possible before going back to Radahn. So I was pretty powered up. I had gone through and just done a lot of stuff before I did this. This was before Radahn as well, but I had done a lot. I might've gone to this after I went to Volcano Manor.
Oh, wow.
In my actual first playthrough, like I was hoovering up levels.
Yeah.
So I might've been overpowered, but I did not find him that tough. It's really cool placement. It's a really striking image. You're fighting on the cliffside. It's really badass. You know, pretty cool.
It's pretty good. This can also get easier because if you have already taken on the Shaded Castle, which we'll be doing later, you will have given Millicent Millennia's spare prosthetic, and she will be here summonable. And she is a very capable summon.
Yes. When I was looking, doing research before this episode, I never quite squared the circle on what she's doing here.
It's pretty good. She's trying to follow Millennia's path, and she knows she went northeast. This is as northeast as you can go on Altus.
Got you. So this is like a dead end. Yeah. This is like trying to like Columbus shit.
Yeah.
Like accidentally. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I was just like, she does not have a connection to the Godskin and stuff like this. Her running into a dead end that happened to be a bad neighborhood makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, because where Millennia actually went, it's obscured, right?
Yeah, you can't get up there.
Even the mountaintops of the giants, which is roughly in the direction, but not precisely where you need to go. You know, it's beyond something called the Forbidden Lands.
Yeah. She couldn't make it.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a sense. When you talk to her here after you complete the Godskin Noble, this is part of the dialogue you have to do, or Godskin Apostle. You have to complete her dialogue here, and she basically talks about fake arms some more.
It feels like her own, which makes sense because this is a miraculous a miraculous contraption made of the white gold, right?
Yeah, and it was made for her. She has these connections to Millennia.
Yes.
I love you calling it a miraculous contraption. It makes me think of like this being like Dr. Nabulus's fabulous contraptulator.
It's powered by giggles.
Yeah. this Godskin Apostle is powered by flubber.
He's full of the stuff that Stretch Armstrong is full of. That sweet syrup.
He drops a weapon. That again is really what's going on here. That was a weapon I used for a lot in my first playthrough as well. The Godskin peeler. peeler is a really gross word for this.
And this is the gouger.
This thing is really good. When you read about it, like one side is for hurting, one side is for flensing. And it is a twin blade.
Yeah.
Item.
It's a combination slashing and piercing weapon.
Yes.
Which is rare. Yeah,
and has access to the Black Flame, the God-killing Black Flame.
Amazing skill on this, that Black Flame tornado.
Yeah,
that you did real cool. Good. Oh shit, button. Yeah,
yeah, very good. So this path that we're on doubles back towards some more celebrants dancing around a big pot, just to really underline what's going on here.
they're rubbing their bellies.
Holding a fork and knife, dinner dog.
Yeah. they're holding up their hands and wiggling their fingers and saying, "Don't mind if I do."
Yep. But there's a couple other little windmill village lits around here that have some bits of note.
Yeah, these windmill pastures that just run the entire northern ridge. Of this. No one of them has an awful lot, but each of them has their own little scene happening. So they're all interesting to talk about, such as the village windmill pasture, the one closest at the foot of the hill, has several misbegotten warriors running rampant and some nobles cowering. So solidarity with the workers, my butts.
In aggregate, what they kind of tell me is that at some point, this windmill league, these celebrants, have lost a little bit of ground, right? At some point, or that like the nobles who fled here, it doesn't make sense for a noble to live here.
Right.
Fled here, got more than they bargained for three ways. They get to this one, and this has been hermit crowded by misbegotten warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And the nobles are cowering. Like, this is not going to be a place of refuge.
Yeah.
They went to the East Windmill one. This has more dancers, and they are around a big pile of flaming bodies with these dead bodies that get up and suicide bomb you. And there's tons of noble clothing in the middle of the fire. So they are either this is part of their meat processing. you know, they burn what remains after they harvest the skull and the ribbies and the skin and stuff, or this is what happens to bodies that they're just going to eat.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, they're not part of the ritual. So they just get burned.
Mm-hmm. It's like wrapping a, you know, wrapping an animal's carcass in a foil and burning it in a hole. Yeah. Just, you know, heats it up. It's like a slow cook boil kind of thing. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. But that was a real surprise when these guys got up and ran over and blew up on me.
It's more surprising to me that the celebrants don't react. It's very funny. Like if you're around a bonfire and like the wood got up and is like, hi, I'm hungry, and then just like ran towards you and you're just like, oh,
from hell's heart I stab at thee.
You gotta keep on dancing. I'm up all night to get lucky. Yeah. The but you get cool, like good fashion soul stuff here.
Yeah. These, that navy hood is I believe the kids call it drip.
Yeah. Oh, drip, huh?
Yeah.
That's the name of the Fred Meyer specific clothing band. No, maybe it's dip. It's something that to me sounds like an insult. I always think drip sounds real bad, but
you dip.
What do I know? I'm a chug. I'm a chog.
I'm a chogie.
Yeah. Chody. Whatever the kids are calling them. But yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the blue hood.
Yeah. And this is they've got the noble set here. These exquisite garments made of the finest silks. And the description on this is real fun because it's, you know, it's like no noble would face the kind of degradation of not wearing their finest clothing, even if they were dead in a ditch.
Yeah.
Dead face down in a ditch. So the hoods, we have found the crimson hood, actually, and we have the navy hood here as well. And what the difference there is kind of neat. So the navy hood, that is given to royalty and dignitaries who have seen the light of grace, who are seen the guidance of grace and are compelled to go, but are sent along with it, with specific orders, even though it is a doomed journey and they're not going to return. Whereas the crimson hoods are for undesirables, who are just sent to their doom with no specific orders, just like, hey, get out.
Yeah. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, which ultimately is a better fate.
Yes.
You know, and that's like Radhika.
Yeah.
Or Roderica. She never saw the guidance grace and went off on her thing with all of her nobles to go become a spider.
Goals.
We can become, we can grab the twinned night swords, which is a twin blade weapon here.
Yeah. I need to do a twin blade run. I have not done one in Elden Ring yet, and those are always fun.
It's a fun weapon. I imagine it owns with status effects.
Yeah.
You know, throw a bleed on there and you can proc it really quickly. For my second playthrough, my sorcerer playthrough, I'm trying to get to New Game Plus. Mm-hmm. And I did a big chug of the final bosses the other day. Got caught on the Elden Beast because the Elden Beast sucks. Yeah. But did get past, I still have not beat Melania without respecking, which is, you know, that's not great. But I had to, so I respec'd into a Rivers of Blood build. Like I looked like, what's the big broken build?
Yeah.
I just want to get past this. I beat it once fair and square.
Yeah.
It is ludicrous. it is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
So I imagine this is similar.
Yeah.
Even with the nerf. Ludicrous. we find some other encroachments into this area. West of here, there's a lake. There's an outcropping above it with a Haima mage launching his mortar at you.
Yeah.
Launch. And this is where we can get the Haimal battle mage set. We've talked about Haima before. Yeah. It is the prospectus at Lucaria, the Rhea Lucardia Academy, who thinks that you cannot stay sealed in. There's no discovery that will happen there. You have to go out and search.
Yeah. Seclusion is no way to foster discovery. It is only a convenient form of escape.
Yes.
Which he's got a point. You know, it is not, you know, Rhea Lucaria is a bad school.
Yes.
I would not rank it especially highly. But yeah, it's the prospectus that is all about conflict resolution and adjudication by massive power. So the gavel is a huge hammer and then he fires a cannon. Yeah. Yeah.
That cannon is great. That's a really good spell. And this is one of two Rhea Lucaria schools that makes inroads out. There's this, and then we're going to run into the missionary, ones who teach the demi-humans up around Mount Gilmere.
Yeah. And the West Windmill pasture has kind of gone to seed. It is completely overrun with rats. You get a neat summon. I would not say a useful summon, but a neat summon, which is the giant rat Ashes. Does not cost any FP to summon, and it just opens a portal to the elemental plane of rats.
Yes. Gives you a bunch of rats for free.
I would say most rats are for free.
Yeah. There's a thing where when you enhance this Ashes, when you give it more, you know, increase its power, you get more rats. So at plus six, you get 4 rats, and at plus 10, you get 5 rats with this. So the more you do it, the more rats you get, the more you power this up. Again, not super useful, but I keep reading things and reading about these spirit summons I didn't mess with that make me want to fuck around with the arena combat.
Yeah.
I still haven't done it yet, but just the idea of like, I don't know, like 6 people each with 5 giant rats. Come on. Like, that seems great.
Rat fight.
Yeah. Like, huge, just let them all go in the middle, you know, battle bots.
Oh, I love it. So you'll remember that there is that forest spanning Great Bridge, or there was. We saw the south side of it with the finger reading crone, and then it collapsed. Now we are up and around on the north side of the bridge. And who is standing here but the person that our buddy Brother Corin was looking for, the ever brilliant Gold Mask.
Yeah, we go back to our Gold Mask and keep our address to ourselves. He's standing at the end. He looks like a sausage hot dog person. He's looking very hollowed. And he has a big golden sun mask pointing up at the Erd Tree. He is a dork.
It's pretty unsettling.
It is unsettling.
He's just still standing there. And he does not talk. We're saying he. Is it ever said that Gold Mask is a he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I would be really surprised if they never use pronouns.
Yeah.
For Gold Mask during this, but I don't actually know.
Yeah. I didn't read that and make a note of it, but it's so thin that there are no secondary characteristics that you could. But just kind of stands there pointing, and we don't really learn the what's going on here until we go and tell Corin about this, and he's like, hey, wait, do you sport with me? Like, are you just yanking my chain? I love that he's on his guard about that.
He probably got patches
yeah.
as a cleric, like like you can get him to go anywhere. He's played Dark Souls. He knows that as a cleric he's very prone to being tricked.
But when you reload the area, he'll be there standing next to him, standing next to Gold Mask, and you can talk to him, and he's just like, I'll sell you miracles if you want, or incantations, and like, they're not very good, and I already bought them all.
Yeah.
Nice try, buddy.
You need to get him back over to Gold Mask to continue this quest line. You go over there, and Gold Mask does not talk. He is always in contemplation. He's a monk. Mm-hmm. What Corin does is hang out with him and observe his fingers and try to interpret them. Yeah. This is going to have a tragic end.
Yes.
Of course. You know, when we get this, there's a really great, since I just did that endgame bit again. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got to go to we're past the spoiler wall, the capital of Ash, and see the Gold Mask. Because my first playthrough, I didn't complete Gold Mask questline.
I never found Gold Mask.
It's tricky. It's one of the trickier ones. The second one, I did complete it, and I got to see Corin in the capital of Ash, and there's really great pathos there.
But he's found his purpose here. He says, and though I am yet to comprehend the daintiest morsel of his wisdom, I know that this is my life's calling. The Golden Order has bestowed me, talentless as I am, the great duty of documentarian.
Yep. He thinks that he is here to write down what this guy does with his fingers. That is what's happening. We will meet him again.
Yeah.
This is about halfway through this quest line.
Yeah.
The westward path from these windmill villages, the windmill village crossroads, we see the Road of Iniquity iniquity. This road that is carved into the northern face of this cliff run, and it runs beneath that bridge.
Yeah.
That we've been up.
Yeah. And we find a golden beetle up here that gives us the protection of the air tree incantation. Mm-hmm. Like, it, I feel ridiculous making a note of all of these, but I really.
This is one of those tells you the theme of the game.
Yes.
Item descriptions. Like, I have this called out as well. I have this open tab.
Yeah. It says, in the beginning, everything was in opposition to the Erd Tree, but through countless victories and war, it became the embodiment of order. The land tried to reject it. The things that were here, be it the beasts or what have you, had an immune response to this. It's an invader.
I mean, not even necessarily immune response, but a anti-colonialist, not wanting to be colonized.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives, the idea of what we call order, or just, the rules here. Like, somebody commented on one of our posts about how the Golden Order is the laws of physics. And I don't, there are things that talk about that in here. It's also written by the Golden Order.
It sounds like this information about the nutritive properties of juice was written by the Juice Council.
Yeah.
Why would they steer you wrong?
Whenever I'm in the line at the store, I keep seeing this M&M magazine that has the subtitle Greatest Rapper of All Time. And I'm like, I don't know, man. M&M magazine's not objective. But my point being is that there's text for that. There's also text for this.
Yes.
Right? Like, that this is a construct. It is not just as immutable as gravity.
Yeah.
And because we're living in a weird magical world and doing deep time, like really long time, it's possible that it's both, and there is a causal relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it is positing that through these victories and through this colonization, it came to control the natural order. It's possible they're both correct, but it's also not, it's both.
Yeah.
It is at least both.
Yeah.
Of those things.
Yeah. And I mean, with some of the forces we can also see, they behave uncannily, right? Mm-hmm. You see the glintstone, the way that it, takes over, replaces tissue, the way that it spires, climbs up. It's invasive. It's almost like a flora.
Yes.
Right? It creates people. Things live in it.
It's such classic FromSoft as well.
Yeah.
It's Brightstone Saldora.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is something they've been doing forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like this as a, conquering begets this thing that, again, is this religion, and its placement near Gold Mask and near Korhin, makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting the cultural version of this religion, seeing mm-hmm. as it affects an individual. And then we're reading about its provenance as a martial victory, mm-hmm. like as a might makes right kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was talking about the immune response, I was speaking specifically of the Erd Tree coming here and growing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And supplanting the sun, which does not exist.
Yes. Canonically.
There's a funeral caravan that runs the Road of Iniquity. And this one I found very tough, not just because there were lots of soldiers, but because they have like a preternaturally strong Mad Pumpkin Head as the rear guard, on this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth making a beeline for this because the weapon you get is really good.
Yeah.
This flail called Great Stars, which at least early on, possibly it has been nerfed and patched, but this was one of those premier like OP weapons in the meta for a little bit.
Yeah, it's just a real way to stack up some bleed, and at least with the Vare patch, you get two of them in a run.
Yeah.
So if you want to dual wield these things, it's a mace that has three spiky heads kind of clustered at the top. A bloodstained star is an ill omen, a fact not lost upon those against whom this weapon is brought to bear. This is the blunt version of the meat cleaver. You get it will restore HP when you land attacks.
Yeah. If you follow this road to the end, we see a lot of Lindell forces amassed outside these ruins at the end of the road. Mm-hmm. These ruins we're going to head into, or they're passing along near. These forces are heading west. We're going to see a lot of evidence of this military campaign towards Gelmir.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that in the future, but all roads basically lead to Gelmir here, and there are a lot of signs of failed campaign.
Yeah. It's pretty rough. Gelmir's not a good scene.
No, they go bad in a couple different ways.
Yeah.
On the way, there's those doomed expeditions. Mm-hmm. The caravan passes along these other ruins here, the Writheblood ruins.
Yeah. These are overtaken by blood. Similar to the Second Church of America, which makes sense because that is nearby. Like, we have kind of wrapped around, like, to get there, you just have to head south from here and cross a little graveyard. There are the rotten bleed dogs out here. They're like skeletal goos, kind of agglomerated around the ruin buildings here. God, the dogs, these dogs, man.
Yeah. These were the pre-patch kill you dogs. The last building here has a red summon sign, for invading, Great Claw Magnus. This is what they added with that very patch. So you don't have to do PvP to get that. I haven't fought Great Claw Magnus or gone into his world.
His world of wonder. Twisted world. See things the ways that he sees.
Yeah, I haven't read his Trapper Keeper, but I'm glad. Again, we talked about that before. I'm really glad they included that.
Yes. It's a tough fight. So he's got the great stars, and he has a ton of Garanks. He has a ton of bestial techniques and incantations. You know, it has that one that sends the thorny, like, teeth and claws out in a radial pattern, and then lots of leaping attacks and things. He's no slouch.
He's a strength shaman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he is using Great Stars.
Yes.
Which we have just seen.
Yeah.
That's how we get the second one, if we'd like it.
Yeah. Based on his gear and stuff, like the fact that he's wearing the fur raiments, which are the ancestral followers' gear, and a prophet's trousers, which gives him this leg shackle. I literally think they're just going for an effect. Like, oh, he's got fur stuff on him because he's bestial and he was once held prisoner, like you would a, you know, werewolf or what have you.
It's almost like they're just designing a guy.
Yeah.
He was literally patched in later.
Yeah.
You know, as a guy. So I can imagine them picking fashion souls to make this guy look like something in Great Claw Magnus.
Yeah. You don't even have to kill him to get the bloody fingers. You just have to invade. You can even just nope out of it. You just have to do it three times to satisfy Barre's little quest here. It's worth killing him, though, if you want another set of the Great Stars. And also there's a Somber Smithing Stone 6, which is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, what's something you want. The proper boss of this these ruins is another Sanguine Noble in the cellar. We fought a lot of these guys recently. No need to really talk about that. It's a repeated boss. The noteworthy thing about this guy is he drops the bloody Helix.
Love this sword.
A dual Helix rapier.
Yeah. Designed to bore into the flesh, causing severe blood loss at the wound. The extracted blood trickles gracefully down the length of the blade. I love that sicko shit in the description. Graceful blood.
Yeah. It's written from the perspective of blood enjoyers.
And this road terminates. You get to the bridge, the bridge that would lead into Gelmir. We're not going to go over there, but you can see it's a killing field.
That whole area. The mountain, like the killing field there, and then the mountains where the expedition lost it to the frenzied flame.
Yeah.
Are some of my favorite little bits of like environmental storytelling in the game. These doomed expeditions into crazy snake land. that's actually we're gonna call it this episode. Shaded Castle fans, we're heading there.
Yes, we are.
We are going to do a roundtable after Shaded Castle, as kind of wrapping up the Altus surroundings before we head into the capital or before we go to Gelmir or do anything else. As of now, we plan to be joined by the Lore Hunter, a friend of ours, Sean, a friend of the show. If you don't know his videos, go on YouTube and subscribe. He does great work, absolutely super good work. Has done a lot of really, really neat stuff. I know that his most recent video, he enlisted an architect to look at Castle Morn and like look at the architecture of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I believe he enlisted. Sean may be an architect in his day job. I only know him as the Lore Hunter. And that sounds damning, but I don't know the day jobs of like a lot of people who do YouTubes.
Right.
But the, you know, it's a cool video. It's a, it's cool, super cool idea for a video. I'm looking forward to watching it. I just saw it this morning, actually, as we're recording. But you should check it out. And we may have another guest. It kind of depends. I just got back from my honeymoon, so I did not do guest giving
when I
was on my honeymoon.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I'm married. I wear a wedding ring now. I'm looking right at it. It's got opals in it.
Stately.
Yeah.
Thinking here, big changes at the network. We've announced this on Patreon, and you've probably seen it, but we want to say it on as many shows as we can. We'd like to welcome aboard our first producer, Gwen. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Longtime community stalwart and friend, has been brought on to help us with production stuff. It's
joining
great.
The team. Yeah. Yeah. We're really happy. It's a huge opportunity to be able to get to add somebody to the crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had a really good year, and that's because of you, people listening. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate you. And, you know, it's good to be able to, it's good for us to be able to staff up because it will help us do our jobs. It feels also good to be able to, bring our friends into the fold.
Yeah.
You know, both of those things feel good. And we have utmost confidence in Gwen.
Yes. So if you see her in the community, tell her congratulations. Yeah, that is in addition to, so she will be co-hosting with us another show at the $10 level of the Patreon. Do we want to say what the name is?
Yeah, I think Gwen signed off. So as the third host. So yeah, Gwen, me and you are going to be doing a show on the $10 level called Quackstack, which it will always have me and you. Gwen most episodes. Every once in a while we'll probably have Jeremy or Brayton, some of the other hosts on. But it is a catch-all kind of water cooler show. We're going to talk about media we're consuming that's not for the show. Because if we can turn all of our lives into content, we get to go to heaven, is how my understanding of it. Only the parts of your life that you turn into content get to go to heaven.
I've been meaning to talk to you about your church, but...
And then the we're also going to solicit from the community, like, goof them up top threes for us to discuss and debate in a fun way. So when we say top three, we're not looking for, like, serious shit. We're just going to have fun. So it's a four fun goof show that I'm really looking forward to recording. I think it's going to be a blast to record.
Yeah. So that'll be monthly, and that'll be starting up in February.
Yes. It's at the $10 level where you get Adaptation Decay, which we have discussed Soulsborne comics on that, but also it's a good show.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to think of other stuff. We made the Stormveil episodes public, so if you are trying to spread the word about the show, you can point to those on the public feed to give an indication of how we cover the legacy dungeons.
Yes. Yeah. So tell your friends. Like, if you like the show and you want to turn people onto it, we have that episode available now as well.
Yeah.
And other than that, just thank you. We appreciate you. This is the second time we're recording in 2023, but still Happy New Year's. I hope everyone is staying safe and happy.
Hey, Gary, can I do something? Can I say something? I'm pretty sure that we are right near, as we're recording or just starting, I think this is the 10th anniversary of this show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We started in 2013.
Yeah. A decade of Bonfireside Chat. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
For people who've been here with us from the beginning, biggest thank yous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great. That's super. thanks everybody.
Yeah.
Until next time, what should they do?
Until next time, I would say do some Black Star dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Looks
and watch
fun.
That video if you haven't watched it. It's a great video.
So if you haven't watched it in a while.
Yeah. And there's a Teenage Dirtbags about it because it's kind of a Bonfireside Chat crossover. It's the most Bloodborne-y video that I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another show on the network.
Yeah. You get that Villa of Ormin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Umbasa.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.